south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. People have noticed I don't speak too much about Peru. Yeah, I've been there, all right, quite a few times. You know me, I love the Altiplano, and Peru doesn't have much of one, though it has lots of mountains. So they've got a number of towns and cities nicely situated around 5,000 to 6,000 feet, which is altiplano-like weather. But mostly they've got a lot of towns and cities that are way up there in elevation, so they're quite cold. Ever notice when you see photos of Peru and they show the locals, they always seem to be wearing those funny hats, the guys anyway, and everyone wearing heavy sweaters made out of alpaca or wool coats. Of course, down on the coast where it's sweltering hot, for me, that's no way to live. It's just for vacationing a couple of weeks out of the year. And you know me, I always prefer off the gringo tourist trail. And that leaves out Peru's number one tourist trail site, Machu Picchu. Plus, it's way up there and very cold. And Lima, Peru, well, that's kind of a congested hellhole. Of course, that's where all the tourists fly in when they're going to visit Machu Picchu. But you soon find out, man is a tangle of congested, polluted chaos. It's got over 10 million people. That's twice as many as Chicago. It's a weird demographic fact that one out of three Peruvians lives in Lima. So I don't really recommend it as a viable plan B. However, like any Latin country, there are some very nice small and medium-sized towns off the trail and beautiful first world-like subdivisions and gated guarded communities and all that. However, everyone I know who's lived in Lima for any length of time, every one of them has a never-ending list of complaints about the place. And unfortunately, every gringo and expat I know who's lived in Lima more than 6 months has been assaulted or robbed. Sad but true. However, gringos, especially newly arrived gringos, have a tendency to be clueless. And sometimes it looks as though they're almost asking for it. Now, as far as Lima, like every other gigantic Latin city, and believe me, it's ginormous. Even much bigger than the New York Met area, too. So, for example, Lima, Mexico City, Sao Paulo, Brazil. The really, really huge ones where you could easily get lost and never find your way out. They all have many, many nice, upscale, first-class neighborhoods. Where do you think all the rich people live? But as they say, no man is an island, and you have to trek out beyond your little protected enclave sometimes. The trick is to know what zones and neighborhoods are safe, unsafe, and moderately safe. And here's something that people don't talk about much. While the rest of the world who haven't had boots on the ground here in Latin America might say they'd never want to go to, for example, San Pedro Sula, Honduras, Tegucigalpa, Honduras, Guatemala City, San Salvador, Lima, Peru. You know, if you search the net, there's a whole list of Latin cities, most of them with a million or more people, that the U.S. State Department has on their poop list. But you hear me say all the time that there are some very nice sections in all of those cities. Now, in any big city, there's a lot of successful businesses, so the people who run those have money. So where do you think the wealthy people live? Nearby, of course, in gated, guarded subdivisions in very nice neighborhoods. Though the trend is lately for the upper middle class and wealthy to move to the burbs. But oddly enough, when you ask them why they want to move, they almost never mention insecurity. They mention the fact that it's chaotic, noisy, a lot of pollution, and terrible traffic. Besides that, the gringos are all doing it. So they always follow the trend of the gringos with some lag time, and the gringos up in the States started moving to the burbs, what, 30, 40, 50 years ago? Some lag time, huh? So the trend has been, for the last couple years anyway, to move out to the burbs. And because Latin governments have virtually no infrastructure planning at all, now the burbs are starting to have terrible congestion and traffic too. Well, unfortunately, as you might have figured, in an effort to get out to the nice, clean, quiet, wide-open spaces, they've added about 2 or 3 hours onto their commute time every day. Duh. Sound familiar? So, during morning and evening rush hour, if you were to take an aerial shot of the highways around big cities in Latin America, you'd realize in a second these people are not having fun. 5 days a week, it's 8 or 9 hours in the office and 3 or 4 hours on the road. Talk about living for the weekend. That's what you get when your business is in the big city and you live out in the burbs. So the key to living out in the beautiful burbs is you either have to, one, be retired, or two, work nearby. In other words, have your business in the burbs. Or three, have a home office like an internet business in the house. Oh, and I wanted to mention that Any of us adult first world gringos can live a very comfortable and expensive, safe and fulfilling life in any big Latin city. Forget about the burbs for a minute. Let's talk about the cities. Like I said, there are many upscale neighborhoods and enclaves that are indistinguishable from very nice neighborhoods up in Seattle and Cleveland. The only major differences being people are shorter, happier, and the signs and billboards are in Spanish. So you're an adult, you're intelligent, maybe. You like certain things about Lima, Peru. You know the good, the bad, and the ugly districts. You stay away from the crap areas, and you have an excellent life. That works well for countless gringos and expats. The problem is when you have a family, when you have kids. You know what happens when your young kids, whom you can control, turn into adolescents who you can't. They're going to go out with their buddies and friends. The first kid who gets his license in his daddy's car is going to be the most popular kid in the group. They're going to do what we did way back when we were in high school. Go to parties, drink and smoke too much, drive too fast, take chances only adolescents will take because they think they're immortal, you know? Didn't you? You can see the problem, right? So the big tip here is, if you bring your kids down to Latin America, it's not a good idea to live in a big Latin city. In that case, if you select a small town, live out in the boonies or in the burbs, then having kids could work out fine. That is, if you have a modicum of control over them. But the problem is, you see, here in Latin America, when your kids go to the same helicopter schools as the rich, entitled Latin kids, you've heard me say before that most of them were not brought up by their own parents, but by the nanny and cleaning lady, meaning they're mostly overindulged and undisciplined. Although they might be nice and well-intentioned, just imagine what you might have done if, when you turned 16, your daddy handed you the keys to a brand new car. All right, enough said about that. Though I wanted to bring up the subject of Peru because you may have heard the president just resigned. A lot of that going around down here in Latin America because they're all, and I mean all, such a thoroughly corrupt bunch of scumbags. Like one Latin American political science professor recently told me in a group of other gringos at my last Expat Insider seminar, he said if a high-level politician resigns or gets thrown out of office before his term's up, he's got to be an extremely corrupt sociopath beyond all measure. Because the thing is, they all take bribes and they all steal. The public knows that. The politicians who get elected know it's a license to steal. But even corruption has its limits, and when you cross that line, it's time to resign, take your millions, and flee to an adjacent country. Or as what has happened recently in a few Latin countries, the people take to the streets, surround the national palaces, and don't let up until the courts are forced to put the guy on trial. Which is why when there's too much heat, these guys will resign before they get indicted and take their millions and flee to an adjacent country. And neighboring Latin countries are glad to take them. I mean, look, when an ex-president or vice president shows up with a bank balance of 50 or 100 million bucks, they're not going to say no. They're going to say, come on in, we'll give you asylum and the key to the city, if not the whole country. So if you've been paying attention to Latin politics, I know it's boring and the news is in Spanish. But you know, that's one big mistake gringos and expats make. They come to a country and they don't give a damn about what's happening on the streets. And you really should pay a little bit of attention. Anyway, you'll find nearly all 20 Latin countries are harboring fugitive Latin bureaucrats and politicians from other Latin countries. In fact, I just read the other day that Panama has 4 or 5 ex-vice presidents and presidents who can't go back to their home countries or will be instantly tossed in the clink. Sound familiar? Wait a minute, wasn't the Shah of Iran charged with capital crimes too? But he found asylum in, guess where? New York. That fat, corrupt piece of lard George Soros is another example. He, like Henry Kissinger, is wanted for a number of crimes in many countries. Yet he lives in a nice big mansion right outside, guess where? New York. Which begs the question, is there any government, politician, or country that isn't totally corrupt? I mean, look. Don't they say one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter? Anyway, the reason why I'm bringing up Peru today is because the president just resigned, all due to the fallout of the largest corruption scandal in Latin American history, the Odebrecht scandal. Sounds German, huh? We'll get to that later. Well, Odebrecht is a gigantic Brazilian construction company. You know, bridges, roads, mostly huge government infrastructure projects. So the scandal revolves around bribes being paid to politicians by Odebrecht to secure huge infrastructure contracts, naturally. Up to now, they've caught presidents, vice presidents, cabinet members, and other high-level bureaucrats taking bribes and payouts in 14 different Latin countries. There's only 20 Latin countries, you know, so that's 70% of them. So far, they've nailed Colombian senators, a couple of vice presidents, one from Ecuador, Nicolas Maduro, president of Venezuela, ex-president Lula of Brazil, ex-vice president and president of Guatemala, and get this, the last three presidents and vice presidents and the sitting president, who, as mentioned, just resigned, of Peru. Now, you have to wonder how this one, albeit very big, construction company, Odebrecht, was able to pay $29 million in bribes to just Peru officials. And as mentioned, the investigation uncovered they've done that in 13 other Latin countries. Man, kind of makes you wonder if they've got any dough left at all to even build an outhouse. Oh, you'd be surprised. Crime really does pay. Now, it's interesting when you find out that the $29 million in bribes paid to the last three, or I should say four, Peruvian presidents was really a drop in the bucket. So then what did Odebrecht Construction get out of it? Only $12.5 billion in contracts. So when you do the numbers, and numbers don't lie, the $29 million in bribes to public officials in Peru only accounted for less than 0.25% of the total contracts they received. Hey, such a deal, huh? For Odebrecht, in this case, they got a little more than 400 times return on their money. No, that's not 400%. I said 400 times. Hey, that's almost up there with the payback that you get if you donate to the Clinton Foundation, huh? Oh, by the way, I was doing a phone consult the other day with a gringo from Hollywood. We got to talking about that Harvey Weinstein business for a second, and he said, Johnny, his problem was he didn't donate enough to the Clinton Foundation. He said, it seems like people who do, at least up to now anyway, get their past sins wiped and a get-out-of-jail-free card. Though it looks like pretty soon the hammer's going to come down on the Clintons, too. Too bad, though. Crotch Itch Bill doesn't look too good these days. He might just check out before the hammer comes down, which would be a shame. Wouldn't it be cool to see him and Hillary in cuffs both walking the green mile? Oh, and about the seemingly unlimited supply of bribe dough that Odebrecht Construction Company seems to have on hand. So far, this is what investigators have uncovered. Oh, and about the investigators, you think Latin countries are going to investigate this? No. Turns out there were just so many multi-million dollar wire transfers coming out of Latin politicians' accounts to First World banks, they kind of stupidly revealed their own hand to international regulators. Hey, it's not like the old days anymore. Everything's online and there's backups of backups too. Talk about massive corruption. Here's a short list of bribes that Odebrecht doled out to various Latin country presidents, vice presidents, and other malignant pus bag officials. In Brazil, they handed out $349 million in bribes to politicians. Venezuela, $98 million to President, dictator Maduro. Dominican Republic, $92 million. Panama, $59 million. Argentina, they handed out $36 million in bribes. Ecuador, $34 million in bribes. Peru, $29 million. Guatemala, $18 million. Colombia, $11 million. And Mexico, $11 million. Though investigators say that's just the beginning. There's a lot more to come. Now, speaking of political pustules, here's something that some gringos and expats are wondering about. How come most presidents, vice presidents, cabinet members, and high-level bureaucrats and politicians in Latin countries do not have pure Spanish last names? You heard me say that in Latin America, people are named a little bit differently. You got, for example, your father's last name. That would be your last name up in the first world. And then you also use your mother's maiden name as the second last name down here. That's totally normal. Which is why on ID documents and such, you'll see four names. Your first name, middle name, last name from your father, and then your last name from your mother, her maiden name. You knew that already, right? Well, then how come, for example, the president of Peru, who just resigned, has the name Pedro Pablo Kuczynski? Kuczynski, obviously an Eastern European name. How'd that happen? Or how about, for example, two former or recent presidents of Argentina having the last name of Kirchner? That's German. So the question remains, how come so many politicians, bureaucrats, etc., and Latin bigwig businessmen have an Anglo or European last name stuck in there somewhere? Whereas, for example, if you were on a busy street in Latin America polling average Latinas and Latinos, you could ask 100, even 1,000 of them. Chances are none of them will have a last name of Northern or Eastern European origin. Almost every Latino on the street will have a typical Spanish last name. Gomez, Gonzalez, Vasquez. No Smiths or Johnsons or Kirchners in that bunch. How do you explain that? Well, it's simple, and it goes back to the fact that every single Latin country has 10, 20, or 30 what they call ruling families or oligarchs. They own the beer companies, big coffee plantations, radio stations, and cement companies. I mean, look, that giant contracting firm from Brazil that's paying all the bribes, the name is Odebrecht, another German name, though it's a purely Latin American company. You see, those top ruling families in each Latin country that have all the power, money, and own all the media outlets, TV, newspapers, etc., they're the ones that back politicians and place who they want in office. And it's almost always one of them, except in countries like Bolivia, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Cuba, where there's been a coup or populist movements, usually along socialist lines, will put up their own indigenous candidates. Anyway, so each Latin country has its ruling oligarch families. They've been more or less manipulating things for hundreds of years. Their whole purpose in being is to maintain power, and get this, trying to purify their bloodlines. Sounds rather Nazi and Aryan-like, doesn't it? Of course, they'll never outright admit that, but it's obvious when you look in the society pages who's getting married. Seemingly every photo op has a European or two in the mix. Oddly enough, it'll be the women in the family that are predominantly Northern European-looking. So Latin families with money and power don't necessarily mate up with other Latin families of money and power, but they do seek out taller, whiter, more fair-haired European types in the mating-dating dance, which, by the way, is a cautionary tale for single gringos and gringas coming down, because you're fair game too. In fact, I happen to know a couple of expat gringos who married into some very wealthy Latin families, and part of it, of course, is love and attraction. The other part is the hope that their kids will be whiter, taller, more fair-haired, and have blue eyes. In other words, somehow there's the misconception that every last one of us gringos and gringas has a Brad Pitt or Chris Hemsworth gene in us somewhere. If you think this is toro mierda, all you have to do is take a little walk through any high-end mall in a big or medium-sized Latin city. Yep, there are a few. And I guarantee you will think you were in a high-end mall in the States. And even if you're way off the gringo tourist trail, your first thought will be, man, there's a lot of gringos here. But in reality, the chances are you are the only gringo there. The rest are from wealthy Latin families who over the generations have integrated more than a touch of European blood. Little by little, the upper class Latins can do that because money and power attract beauty. That's kind of an unbreakable universal law. And as expat Eddie says, uncouth, pot-bellied, cowboy hat-wearing politicians from the boonies and narcos attract sexy, classless bimbos. He says they come into his restaurants all the time. Now, as for normal middle and lower middle class Latinos, they want to increase their bloodlines too. But without power and money, they rarely attract tall, light-skinned, fair-haired mates. But once in a while, a baby is born that's rather fair-haired and may have green eyes. There seems to be one in every extended family, perhaps one out of 50 or 100. Anyway, Latin families are so overjoyed when an anomaly like that happens. For the rest of that kid's life, he or she is the family superstar. Hey, where do you think the term the fair-haired boy came from? Meanwhile, up in Chicago, Michigan, or Cleveland, you or I could be 6 foot tall, blonde, with piercing blue eyes, and we don't even rate a mention. No one cares, but down here, that's a winning lottery ticket, and all doors are open. By the way, I know of a few expats and a gringo who married into high-end Latin families. And all of them said it's not what it's cracked up to be because there's a strict family hierarchy. And you ain't in it, but your kids are. There's the patriarch, usually the old grandpa alpha male, kind of the Tony Soprano figure. Then there's most of the kids or grandkids who are pretty much lazy do-nothings. Though there's always one or two in the family that are motivated enough to carry on with the business. And those are the people you're forced to hang out with and go to parties with. That's your new family, because when you marry someone here in Latin America, you've also married the family. Doesn't matter if you married the most beautiful girl at the chicken bus stop or the wealthy girl or guy who went to university up in the States. Seems like a gringo or gringa in a lot of ways. Except that back home in Salvador, her dad's the coffee king. Again, if you marry a Latino or Latina, you've married the family and all the baggage that goes with it. And if you marry up, you marry rich, you'll always be in a subordinate position to the siblings, even if they're lazy-ass, idiot pinheads, because it's all about the bloodlines. However, if you marry into a middle-class or lower-middle-class Latin family, you will be the new superstar of that family. But beware, that entails a different kind of baggage. You know, that calls for a boots-on-the-ground story that explains just what I'm talking about here. I have a gringo friend, I should say an acquaintance. Yeah, more of an acquaintance. My dad used to say, people are your acquaintances when they're doing all right, and they're your friends when they want to borrow money. Anyway, about 30 years ago, he came down to Central America. Young, good-looking, sandy-haired, blue-eyed guy, traveling only slightly better than a backpack. Being that he was way off the Gringo tourist trail, he stuck out like a sore thumb. In a good way, everyone wanted to meet him and be his friend. Got invited to parties and picnics. Soon enough, he was rubbing elbows with Latin high society. And he said, wearing nicer clothes, too. That's one of the great things of being off the Gringo tourist trail and one of the only gringos around. You are noticed and, man, the doors are open to you. But believe me, you have to choose wisely. Anyway, in time, my friend met a nice young girl whose dad was insanely wealthy. He admitted he went through a vetting process with the family they approved, though he always knew deep down it was because of that mystical Brad Pitt gene. Although his new wife was attractive, the male side of the family kind of had sort of a Prince Charles dominant ugly gene, in a Latin way. Anyway, they got married, and now it was time to put his dreams into action. He always wanted to have a restaurant. Unlike expat Eddie, who had no idea he'd get in the restaurant business. He just was looking for good sushi, could never find it, and said, hell, I think I can do this. So anyway, this guy's wife financed his dream, the restaurant. And man, he didn't want a regular restaurant. He wanted a high-end joint. After about a year and a half, it crashed and burned. As you know, restaurants and bars are risky business. But if your wife is loaded, and if at first you don't succeed, well, he did it again. Another big old fancy restaurant, different menu, different location. Oh, I forgot to mention, in the meantime, he went to Europe to chef school. Hey, good idea, right? Should have thought of that first, I think. Anyway, after a year or two, crashed and burned again. Restaurant number two down the tubes. Three's a charm, right? So she financed another restaurant. What we won't do for love, huh? Nice area, high rent again. In fact, just a block or two off the Pan American Highway. So then what happened? Well, that one hit. Been going strong for years now. All right, so that's his rags to riches story. By the way, he's got some entitled snotty kids that really need an old school whipping. Or at least he should cut off the TV and the smartphone, but he won't. And you know what's typical? People complain about other people's kids, and their own kids are worse. Man, you see that all the time with mixed gringo Latino families. I know, it's the same up in the States. I've seen it with my own family. So anyway, that's just a little example of how when you're off the tourist trail, your gringo advantage could very well be on steroids. Example two, I know another fair-haired, light-skinned, handsome gringo type. Not Brad Pitt handsome, but you know, doesn't really much matter. Once you land down here, you gotta add 2 points to your 10 score, making me a solid 7 or an 8. Who'd have thunk, huh? Anyway, this gringo came down some years ago, too. The artsy type, not much of a pot to pee in either. And after backpacking around, he found he really liked being off the tourist trail. Because again, he found, like nowhere else, the doors were open to him. He too married a very wealthy Latina. Oh, and remember, these wealthy Latinos and Latinas I'm talking about, they had nothing to do with the wealth accumulation of their families. They're just the kids of the wealthy. For them, it was just an accident of birth. So anyway, this particular fair-haired gringo is the kind of guy you sit down with and decide, man, I don't want to hang around with him. He's just not a nice guy. But you know, in the end, even he told me he was useful to the bloodline. Almost sounds like one of those B-grade 1960s flying saucer movies. I think I once saw one called Mars Needs Men or Mars Needs Women or Trump's Hair or Obama's Ears or something. Guess I'm showing my age, or maybe it's just my bad taste in movies. It was just a phase. Remember when that Ed Wood movie came out with Johnny Depp? That stirred up my interest in really bad movies, but I'm over that now, thank God. So anyway, that last little story just goes to prove you don't have to be a nice guy to make it big down here. You can be a real jerk and hit the jackpot. By the way, that guy's wife funded his business ideas too, and he hit on a good one. Has a lot of people working for him. But as it turns out, the rumor mill says they all pretty much hate him. Hey, but you gotta eat, right? Which makes him really the exception to the rule as far as gringo bosses down here. Seems like practically all the other gringos and expats I know with brick-and-mortar businesses, and I know a lot of them, their Latina and Latino employees are dead loyal to him. They'll all practically tell you to a person that they love working for gringos and wouldn't have it any other way. Mostly because compared to Latin bosses, we spoil them. Of course, we don't see it that way. We just tend to treat them more like human beings than Latin bosses do. I'm talking about Latin owners now, not a Latin foreman or boss who's just a worker too and has no ownership interest in the company. Those guys can be awful nice and friendly too. Oh, and here's something. Got into another interesting discussion the other day. The fact that up in the United States, almost no one wears hand-me-downs anymore. And if you did, you certainly wouldn't want anybody to find out. Unless, of course, you made a purchase at a vintage clothing store. That's a different story, right? It's all about the fashion then. But you know, when I was a kid, we all had hand-me-downs. Well, maybe not if you were the oldest kid in the family, but the next in line, they certainly wore them. In fact, I'm old enough to remember my mother and grandmother darning socks. Man, that's a lost art, huh? So the problem is kids up in the States are so terribly spoiled. If they ever did wear hand-me-downs out of necessity, and the rumor got out soon, it would be on Twitter and the whole world would know. Oh God, get out the razor blades. I'm bringing this up because still, probably 90 to 95% of the Latin population is using now or has used hand-me-downs without a single bit of psychological damage. No one talks about it, disparages it, or makes any reference to it. It's a normal way of life here. I said 90 to 95%, and the other 5 or 10% is the upper or wealthy classes, who, in keeping with first world attitudes and platitudes, would try to avoid the embarrassment at all costs. Sure, it's all right to buy expensive stuff that's distressed and looks used, but that's a different thing. With that upper 5 or 10%, it's about keeping up appearances. Wouldn't want your neighbors and friends to think you were having financial troubles or were about to hit the skids. So yes, most maids and cleaning ladies and Latin mothers darn socks, except the upper 5 or 10%. And hand-me-downs, well, they don't even have a name for hand-me-downs. It's just something to wear. You know, I've been in a lot of Latin homes, and one time I witnessed this. Eddie's girlfriend slash fiance Claudia was going through her closet deciding which clothes she didn't want to wear anymore. And her sisters were waiting anxiously in the hall wondering who was going to get the stuff. Same thing happens with most all Latin families. That's why it's a very good idea if you yourself have outgrown or just don't want a piece of clothing anymore. Definitely give it to your maid, gardener, or cleaning lady. Or throw it in the car and give it to anyone you see humping down the street with a load of firewood on their back. Or anyone you see at a chicken bus stop. All right, just want to remind you before the show closes that we're on for my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. Again, in and around Guatemala, Latin America. Why? A lot of reasons. Because we're in the Altiplano, that golden sweet spot where you've got spring-like weather all year round. It's way off the Gringo tourist trail. I've got loads of great contacts to introduce you to, and that's just for starters. So for the details, the sign-up information, and how to get in on the early bird discounts, go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. And while perusing that information, you'll also find out how to add a few days to your trip and apply for permanent or temporary residency in Guatemala. Still, one of the easiest, fastest, and cheapest ways to get residency. And remember, after 5 years, you qualify for nationality and a passport. It's a great way to plant a second flag. You just might need it. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.